Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
We're rolling. So, Stack Waddy Game, am I going first or are you going first?
Well, you go first. Go on.
Okay. I thought in this week that has seen the biggest white riot in recent years, we should do something that was rooted in that part of America. Okay. We're talking about the flyover states of America is largely what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
And what I want you to do is to tell me whether these names are names from Billboard's top country stars of 2019, or are they Republican senators? Okay. Are they from Billboard's top country stars of 2019?
Really? Republican senators or country stars?
Republican senators. Okay, here's the first name.
Go on.
Blake Shelton. Blake Shelton. Is he Billboard's top country stars of 2019 or a Republican senator?
That's so good. That's brilliant. I'm saying a senator. I don't know why, because I think I read about him, but I'm probably completely wrong. I'm saying a senator.
No, his recent albums are called Starting Fires and Blake Shelton Bar and Grill. He's from Ada, Oklahoma, and he's engaged to Gwen Stefani. Okay, number
brilliant.
Two, Martha McSally. Martha McSally. Is that one of Billboard's top country stars of 2019 or a Republican senator?
She's got to be a senator, surely.
She is. She's a senator from Arizona who opposes limits on gun sales as unconstitutional. Okay. Next one. Here we go. Is this one of Billboard's top country stars of 2019 or a Republican senator? Rand Paul. Rand Paul. Country star or senator?
That's a brilliant. Is Rand short for Randy? I suppose it is. And Randy in itself is short for Randolph. Aren't American names extraordinary? Rand, I'm saying Rand's a senator. I literally don't know.
He is. He's a senator from Kentucky who said recently, I don't want my guns or my marriage registered in Washington. Okay. Next one.
This is good.
Cody Johnson. Cody Johnson. Is he one of Billboard's top country stars of 2019? Or is he a Republican senator?
Well, entirely because it sounds Southern States, and it has echoes of Commander Cody and his lost planet airmen. I'm going to go for country and western, but who knows? Go on.
Yeah, you're right, actually. His albums include Six Strings, One Dream, and Cowboy Like Me. He comes from Sevastopol, Texas, and he holds the attendance record for the Houston Livestock and Rodeo. Okay, moving on.
That's a brilliant statistic. That's great.
Kelly Loeffler. Kelly Loeffler. Billboard top country stars of 2019 or a Republican senator?
Kelly has got to be a musician. I don't know why. There are so many kind of country and folksy musicians called Kelly. She's got to be one of them. Am I right?
No, she was a senator from Georgia until she lost the election last week. And when asked about the Access Hollywood tape of Donald Trump, she said, I'm not familiar with that. Okay. I'll give you one more.
That's a brilliant answer. That's like football managers say, I didn't see the penalty, but
I absolutely didn't see it. Okay. Tom Tillis says that a Billboard country star of 2019 or a Republican senator. Tom Tillis
is a Billboard star. He's a country western star. He must be.
No, he's not. He's a senator from North Carolina in favor of guns being carried in restaurants and parks. There you go.
In favor. That's fantastic.
In favor. Actually, not against it. In favor.
In favor. You're encouraged. You're frisked to make sure you've got a gun before you enter the restaurant.
Yes, particularly children's restaurants and park play areas. Well, how about that?
Yeah. That's absolutely brilliant.
So that's my
question. There is a segue. I love the expression flyover states. It's brilliant, isn't it? And of course, in the flyover states now, there are a lot of people who are aggrieved to find that while they were inviting and courting publicity when they broke into the Congress building, parading around with their horns and stuff, they're now horrified to find that they've been tracked down by the FBI at home, haven't they? And they're about to be prosecuted. What did I do wrong?
Finally having their furry collar felt, I never expected that to happen.
I know.
What are the chances?
I like the fact that both Jamiroquai and Badly Drawn Boy both posted stuff. I don't know if you saw that, because the kind of gang leader appeared to look exactly like Jamiroquai, and there was the guy who stole the lectern, the stand. The guy was taking a stand, indeed.
Yes,
the guy
was. God.
I know. It was.
Have you ever been to the Capitol?
No, I haven't.
I went around the Capitol building with Ken Sharp many years ago. We were over there doing John Hyatt for Q, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a couple of days, and we went around the White House. You could go around the White House in those days, and we went in the Capitol. And I'm English, I'm not an American bone in my body, whatever. But when I went to the Capitol, it is genuinely awesome. It is. You behave with respect in the Capitol, no matter where you come from, so... What struck me about the footage was that nobody was struck by awe at all. It was all a bit of a lark, wasn't
Completely.
It?
Completely. Let's get into Nancy Pelosi's office, put our feet on the desk and have a selfie taken.
Yeah.
Anyway. Oh, it was astonishing. So, look, Stack Waddy, do you want mine?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. Now, do you remember, I hope this isn't too obscure, I don't think so, do you remember the flame-haired Californian harpist, Joanna Newsom?
Oh, right, okay.
With a penchant for slightly fey and food-related song titles. Now, keeping her in mind, are you prepared to play Song by Joanna Newsom or Vegetarian Restaurant in Brighton? Okay. Is it really? So it's either a Joanna Newsom song or it's the name of a restaurant in Brighton that sells vegetarian and vegan food.
It's Brighton, isn't it? Because Brighton.
I went for Brighton.
Clearly,
I love Brighton.
Clearly, there are more vegetarian restaurants in Brighton.
I've had a look.
There are chemists nowadays.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are literally every corner. Okay, carry on.
Right, okay. Number one, Sprout and the Bean. Sprout and the Bean. Is that a song title or is that the name of a... It's being by Vegan Fair.
It's a vegetarian restaurant in Brighton.
It's not. It's a track from the Milk-Eyed Mender album. It's their first record, I think. Okay. Right. Next one. Clam, Crab, Cockle, Cowrie.
That's one of her songs. Do you know
it is. It's also a song from Milk-Eyed Mender. Okay. Next one, The Almond Tree.
That's a vegetarian restaurant in Brighton.
Correct. This little gem is not even a 10-minute walk from Brighton Station. A hearty vegan cookbook.
I can tell you exactly where it is right now, actually. I know that bit of Brighton. Anyway,
you've probably eaten in The Almond Tree.
No, not me.
Okay. All right. Is this a Newsom song title or is this a vegetarian restaurant? Root Candy.
That is a Joanna Newsom song.
No. If you go to 105 Western Road, you'll find Brighton's best plant-based and vegan restaurant. There you are. It's good, isn't it? It's getting worse.
Very good. Very
okay.
Good.
Peach Plum Pear. Peach Plum Pear.
Oh, it's a children's book, isn't it? Each Peach Pear Plum. Peach Plum Pear. That is a vegetarian restaurant in Brighton.
No, it's a track from Milk-Eyed Mender. Again, Okay, we've got two or three to go. Goose eggs.
Oh, good grief. Joanna Newsom song.
It is. It's a song from her Divers album. Bay Leaf.
That's a vegetarian restaurant in Brighton.
Yeah, it is. It's our 49 St. James Street. Our extensive menu contains specialities from all regions of India, specialising in tandoori, korai and fish dishes.
Very good.
There you are. And petit pois.
Petit pois.
Petit pois.
That is a vegetarian restaurant in Brighton.
It is. Located in the famous South Lanes. A French tapas-style formula. And offers something a bit different in the city with lots of dining options. There you are. You did. I would say in the main, you won there. Actually, it works, doesn't it?
It's good.
And I loved yours. So topical. It's brilliant. It's fantastic. So what else is happening?
I have to say, I tell you what. I woke up this morning and do you know? It's just amazing the treasures of YouTube. I don't know how I found my way to it, but you know, every single musician who for years used to hide from journalists and people who asked them questions about their past or records they once played on whatever. Now are just taking to YouTube. You know, they all say take to Twitter.
That's right.
He took to Twitter.
Take to the sofas.
Taking to YouTube and getting their nearest and dearest to put those same questions to them. And so you can find just anybody, you know, talking about their life and their career with varying degrees of interest. Pasters in point, this morning I found Bobby Whitlock. Bobby Whitlock, remember?
Right. Yeah, was Derek and the Dominoes.
Singer of Derek and the Dominoes.
Yeah.
Co-wrote Layla, I think he probably has some part of it. Member of Delaney and Bonnie and, you know, all those kind of acts.
And Captain Powell, wasn't
he? He seems a really nice chap, looks quite well-preserved, you know, in his early 70s. And he's interviewed in these clips by his wife, okay? Now, we never see his wife. She's behind the camera, whatever, putting the questions to him. But I'm saying she's about 20 years younger than he is, okay? Yes? I think she came along slightly later in the picture, yeah? And you can tell this...
It happens.
Yeah. It happens with rock stars, huge amount of time. And you can tell this is whole thing's being orchestrated by his wife, because in each clip, and there are many clips, and they're all about different parts of his career, he's wearing a slightly different shirt or top, okay? And clearly his
wife...
So she's
being stars. You're not going on YouTube dressed like that.
No, you know, we've all kind of been there a little bit, haven't we? You know, my wife is not beyond saying, you're not wearing that, are you?
Oh, good Lord, no, that's absolutely standard.
You've got a nice shirt in the drawer that you never wear, you know, because...
Yeah, I appreciate that too, and need it.
Anyway, so she's always got him in a slightly different top, as if he's going out for a lunch party nearby where they live in Nashville or whatever. And it's always shot in a slightly different angle in what is clearly their lovely home. So there's always a crackling log fire or a very endearing dog in the background, you know. Now, it's a good job those details are there, because Bobby Whitlock has no business telling stories, because either he can't remember or he can't put together a narrative about anything at all. So I sit there.
This is riveting. I'm going to have to watch this.
Well, you would have to.
It sounds absolutely captivating. Can it be as bad as you're making out?
No, it's not that terrible. I just wanted to make a contrast here. Because Bobby Whitlock doesn't remember stuff and can't tell stories. Contrast that with the other person who I was also watching videos of this morning, whose video I actually sent to you to watch.
I saw it, it's fantastic.
It's just, of course, James Taylor. And James Taylor has been interviewed millions of times and is incapable of being boring, ever. He's always got something to say.
And he's so sweet-natured too, isn't he?
Absolutely.
So likable. So modest.
And this is done on his website. I'm sure you'll find it on... Well, look at James Taylor channel on YouTube, you'll find it. And I think it was called Fantasy Flashcards, this little format that they'd obviously cooked up. So it's like the old... It's like the old personal file in Smash Hits, you know, whatever. It's kind of...
What colour's Tuesday?
Describe yourself in one word or whatever. You know,
there's some good questions. Like, if you had a warning label, what would it be? It's a really good question, I think. His was, don't engage this man in a political conversation. Which is a great answer.
And what did he say? What did he say about what advice would you give the 21-year-old yourself? You know, he said, don't have children until you're ready to settle down. Don't go into
avoid debt. A major drug habit.
Avoid a major drug habit.
Yeah,
and don't go into debt. And he just puts himself over so well. Anyway, the thing I thought was worth sharing with people listening to the podcast. Is he's asked about, has he got any tattoos?
Oh, that was my favourite bit too. It's fantastic.
And that leads him into quite a long answer, actually.
It's a fantastic.
Because he immediately, he's not one of these people who goes, let me think. He goes, no, instantly, front of mind. He said, yes, I had a tattoo. In 1968, I was in London with my sister, Kate, isn't it?
Yeah, Kate, yeah.
And they must have been at a party, and they met somebody who had a tattoo. And Kate said she would like a tattoo. And the guy said, and I just thought it was so interesting because the light it threw on how different London was in 1968.
But also, actually, having a tattoo was a sort of rarity then. Actually. It was. You saw someone with tattoos, wow, where did you get that? Which is his question, wasn't it?
And also, you couldn't get one in London. You know what I mean? You couldn't get one in the bohemian areas of London where currently you can't move for tattoo art. So this person advised them to take the car and go and drive out to Aldershot.
He said it took him 2.5 hours drive. I come from just next to Aldershot and know all about it, it's not actually that far. But the interesting thing is that Aldershot is the home of the British Army.
There you go.
So that's the reason that it's there a garrison would be a tattoo parlor. It's a garrison town.
He says, here's the address, go to this arcade, and it's full of fascinating little details. It was closed for lunch.
Yeah.
The idea, in 1968, you had to drive for 2 hours to find a tattoo parlour and then it would be closed for lunch.
Yeah.
You're lucky it wasn't Wednesday, which would have been half-day closing.
Exactly.
Anyway, the guy comes back. She asks for the tattoo and he explains that he doesn't tattoo women unless their husbands are in attendance.
And the husbands are sober. That's an amazing detail, isn't it?
And
he managed to convince them by saying he had his passport, didn't he?
His passport proved that they were brother and sister.
Bonafide it. And I think he had to agree to have one too, didn't he? Or whatever, because he said he did have one. So he said, as long as I have one and she can have one, and they both have his little tattoo on their shoulders. It's a really touching story, isn't it?
I thought, God bless James Taylor. You know, I've seen James Taylor a bunch of times, and he's always got something new to say because he just takes an interest in the world around him, and he doesn't forget details at all. Whereas Bobby Whitlock, you know, was there when Layla was composed and can't remember anything about it. Anyway, everybody, all your favourite rock stars, no matter how obscure, are all out there on YouTube telling stories. Go and look them up. But only after you watch this.
The Word Podcast. Prime cuts of popular culture served fresh each week.
So Bob Dylan pinched her bum. You're going to tell me about that later. Anyway, no, seriously. We were talking about it's 50 years since 1971, which I really should write a book about.
You should write a book about, Dave. And, very, very popular.
I should particularly focus on this week in 1971, because that's when Neil Young played at Massey Hall in Toronto. Have you ever heard this record?
Yes, I have. Yeah, and he was absolutely at a kind of peak, wasn't he? Didn't they put an extra show on? There was another show at 6:30 in the evening.
Oh, they could have. Yeah.
So when he did that, he'd already done one before it, which is astonishing, really. There
and this was in a bootleg for years, but was put out a few years ago, and it's really good. I mean, it's just that it's the peak period of kind of Neil Young productivity, it strikes me, because he'd put out after the Gold Rush the previous year, and then he started touring. And while he was touring, he was writing the songs that would be and recording the songs that would be Harvest. And so it's amazing. I was listening to this yesterday afternoon, and it's got Tell Me Why, Old Man, My Needs a Maid, Cowgirl in the Sand, Don't Let It Bring You Down, you know, The Needle and the Damage Done, Ohio, and all this. And the amazing thing is, I mean, apart from the fact it's a really good concert, And he's, you know, how old is he? I don't know, about 24 or something like that.
But he wrote all those in about 6 months.
He wrote them in weeks, really. Yeah. You know,
incredible.
On the road, even he remarks upon it, you know, in the chat. He says there's not going to be many old songs. And by old songs, he meant from the record that came out the previous year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we've moved on from that.
After the Gold Rush, that's kind of gone, really. I'd like to play these new ones because I've been writing a lot of new ones. And, of course, you hear the amazing sound of it. You know, he introduces the needle and the damage done and explains what made him write it, you know. And he plays Ohio and people don't know what it is. You know, it's the idea. It's so alien to the kind of contemporary concert-going experience where, you know, everything that people play is immensely familiar, you know, and everybody has a kind of pre-programmed response to it, you know, don't they? But also, I you know, we've often had this discussion about when did whoop culture start? You know, the kind of audiences feel that they have to advertise the fact that they recognize every reference by whooping, you know, saying, I got that, I recognize this tune.
Yeah, I'm more of a fan than you are.
I'm more of a fan.
It's the same as wearing the old faded T-shirt with the tour dates from 10 years before, isn't it?
Well, I think that's where it started. I think if you go and listen to this record, you can hear the first signs of when he mentions anything, any place in Canada, the audience go, woo, and they applaud, you know.
I'm Canadian too.
We're Canadian.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, we're all fulfilled. But it's a fantastic record. It really is worth hearing. And, of course, you know, I was nudged to listen to it again by the fact that it's 50 years since he did that concert.
And he sold his catalogue, didn't he?
He sold 50% of his catalogue.
Yeah. Of
his catalogue, because we've been tracking this over previous weeks, the other people who sold their catalogue, Stevie Nicks, well, Bob Dylan. So Neil Young's the latest to sell 50%.
But it's just, I thought it was interesting. I read about that, and they were saying that Merck Mercuriadis, isn't it, the guy who runs the company who bought it, Hypnosis, has said that they're having a very respectful attitude towards the half catalogue they bought, and it will not be used for advertising. Because, of course, famously, you remember This Note's For You?
Yeah.
The quote
is
that where he says, I ain't singing for Pepsi, I ain't singing for Coke, et cetera, et cetera. He's kind of, and there was a quote about Heart of Gold. He said, there'll never be a kind of, you know, Burger of Gold advert, you know. But it made me think, I wonder how you can police that, really. Does that mean they still have to get his permission to, even though they own it, to decide where they put that catalogue? I don't really know. It made me think that you're going to hear more and more of those old catalogues because people have got a real incentive to work them. You know, if you don't, you know, contemporary musicians are sitting back waiting for the film company to get in touch and say, we're thinking of using this on a soundtrack, is that okay? Whereas in this case, you know, these people who bought the Fleetwood Mac catalogue, Dylan catalogue, they're working them because they've spent hundreds of millions of pounds they need to recoup. Don't you think? So there's going to be...
But it's also one of the explanations that I was reading this week for this boom is streaming, because streaming means that everybody has got access to everything, all the tunes, and therefore people play old Neil Young songs or old Beatles songs a lot more than
if they had to buy it. Exactly,
that's a different thing, you know.
You
just play them and let them wash it all over.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
But I tell you what, just moving slightly to the right of this, is this story about Tracy Chapman and Nicki Minaj.
Oh, I saw that.
The sampling that Tracy Chapman has, I think it's £300,000 or something like that. She's been paid to kind of settle this case out of court over a Nicki Minaj track that was closely based on a Tracy Chapman song from
but it was, she found out it wasn't, doesn't she? It was, but indirectly. It was actually sampled, a dancehall track by a Jamaican artist called Shelly Thunder. So she thought, either I can get away with this, although she did pretend that this had somehow leaked, it wasn't officially released, this record, but
I can get away with this.
What she didn't know was that Shelly Thunder's song was based on Baby Can I Hold You Tonight from Tracy Chapman's first album. Or the one that won the Grammy Award. So she was kind of nobbled, wasn't she?
But what I was interested in, where looking into this further, was apparently Tracy Chapman is well known for not clearing samples. And there are certain artists who you really sample at your peril.
Yeah.
And so there is a website called don'tsampleme.com. Which is lists all the people that you really shouldn't go near, or all the copyright owners that you really shouldn't go near, because they won't settle at all. They will take you to court. I thought it was really interesting.
It is fascinating.
This has got a, and of course, you read the story that Tracy Chapman's got £300,000 or whatever it is, and you think, oh, she's done all right out of this, and then you think, no, if you hire a few lawyers and you have the odd deposition or whatever, you've soon got
not much that left.
There's not a awful lot
people
left.
People have got yachts to buy, haven't they?
Absolutely.
I know.
Yeah. So, David Bowie, you were talking to me about David Bowie.
Oh, well, yeah, I was watching the two things on BBC4, which I thought were great, actually, 5 years. And one, I think, called The Genius of David Bowie. I thought they were fantastic. They're mostly just live performances from owned by the BBC and interviews on the BBC. And he's just so funny. And he writes that, at times, very harrowing, elliptical, complicated, quite harsh music. And yet he's still got the confidence to present himself as this, what he is or was, which is a very, very, very funny and entertaining and upbeat and Flip, wasn't he? An optimistic character. Yeah. So likable, so funny. Now, there were a couple of things that I'd forgotten, which I thought were really interesting. One was the story of My Way. Do you remember that story?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in 1968, when he was a kind of scuffling kind of artist hanging around Denmark Street, somebody offered him the chance to... at that time, everyone was... The vogue was to take songs that already existed, European hits, English lyrics. Hence, you don't have to say you love me. And he was offered the chance to rewrite a song called Com Dabitude.
Write words for it.
I'm
sure if you go to France, in France, they're doing this all the time with hits from America and England.
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
Because it doesn't go on that much going the other way around.
No, it doesn't. But anyway, he wrote these songs hoping to make a big pile of cash out of it and was told that they were absolutely terrible. And the job was then given, again, subsequently to Paul Anka, who wrote the lyrics, which were My Way. And Frank Sinatra had a huge hit in 1969. I thought that was interesting. I completely forgot that he was involved with that. And the other thing was that it's really touching. In 2013, for a track, I think it was Where Are We Now?, he's wearing in the video, do you remember this, a T-shirt with the words on it, Song for Norway. Do you remember that? Norway, right?
And
it's a message to his old girlfriend, Hermione Farthingale. And you remember, he was in a group called Feathers, with this kind of very fey, Jack Brel, kind of mime folk music act, a trio. And he was having a major love affair with her, and which, again, is an interesting story. There was this really, really posh girl with a solicitor father the family disapproved of Bowie enormously, thought he was a chancer, thought he was a liability.
Sorry, in the mid-60s, if you were called Hermione, you were posh.
Oh, yeah, well, Hermione Farthingale. You can just imagine how posh you were going to be.
Nowadays, every other girl child is called Hermione because of Harry Potter.
Because Harry Potter. No, those says you were posh. I know. And it's so funny. Somebody did track her down a few years ago, an interview, and he said, oh, I absolutely adored him. I never speak about him. I absolutely adored him. He said, but, you know, he was kind of quite old school. You know, he wanted his hot meals on the table at 7 o'clock and he wanted his shirts ironed and he believed in rampant promiscuity for him. So when she eventually took the job, she was offered a job. She was a ballet dancer and kind of actress, and she was offered this job of as a part in Song of Norway, and went off and did it, and fell in love with a fellow actor, and that's what broke his. He's completely broke his heart. It was really interesting, actually. So he never really kind of got over it, you know. And I thought it was really touching that there he was towards the end of his life, sending out this little message to her that only she would understand. And I think also it's something that is part of the natural cycle, possibly in all of us. Leonard Cohen did the same thing, didn't he? At the end of his life, got back in touch with Marianne, you know. Yeah. And, you know, there's in High Fidelity by Nick Hornby, when he's going through that kind of low point, he kind of calibrates his life by going back to all his old girlfriends, doesn't he? And meeting up with them, trying to find out who he is, you know. And I thought it was really
never a good idea.
Not a great idea. No, not a great idea. But there we are. Letter to Hermione. There's a song that he wrote to her in which she's immortalized, which we were talking about the other week, weren't we? Yeah. And there are lots more of them. You know, the story of My Sharona.
Oh, of course, right. Yeah, go on.
My Sharona is a girl called Sharona Alperin, who was a real estate agent. And she was the inspiration for the Knack song written by Doug Feger. And it was really sweet. And she absolutely loved it. She hated the possessive my. She wasn't very keen on that. But she was very keen to be remembered, to be immortalized in the songs.
I wonder if she puts on her business cards. You would, wouldn't you, in America?
You think you would, too.
If you're a real estate agent, you'd...
You would,
I think. It's a heck of a calling card, though.
Yeah. And the girl Valerie, there's a girl called Valerie Starr, who's a makeup artist, who went out with Dave McCabe from the Zootons, who wrote the song that, you know, such a huge hit for... And they were both really happy with it. They both made the same point when they were interviewed about it, that in the age of social media, it'd be totally different. Your life would be incredibly invaded by something like that. But when it happened that long ago, people just discovered. They found out, later on. Yeah. And they're both very happy with it. Although it must be very odd, if you're called Sharona, people would go, oh, you mean like the song, My Sharona? And you have to say, funny you should mention that. It's written about me. That's my tune.
So this week also seen the death of Jerry Marsden, who I think was still married to the same person, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
From
way
back, you know, because...
He's a good story, Jerry Marsden, I think. Because, you know, he had all those hits in the early 60s, you know, How Do You Do It and I Like It, both by Mitch Murray. And then, obviously, You'll Never Walk Alone, which was from Carousel, wasn't it? Rodgers and Hammerstein. But so he never... I mean, I don't know how much money he made because he didn't write any of those. But he effectively sort of went into panto in 1967, didn't he? I mean, he wasn't making records off that. In 1967, he started in panto. And yet, through You'll Never Walk Alone... you know, the Hillsborough fundraising.
He's Ferry Across the Mersey is also a very significant song.
That's true.
He's popping up all the time. And he did write that, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He wrote that. So he's had, I mean, unbelievably enduring fame, hasn't he, for an incredibly long time.
It is.
On the basis of doing not that many songs.
You don't
really
need to. In pop music, and it's people's memories that give you a life. But,
and Nick's George Harrison's girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
That's brilliant, yeah. George Harrison came back off tour. Can't remember what her name was. And he was met, and they were big pals. And Jerry met him and he said, so I've got good news and bad news. Just good news, I'm in love. Bad news, I'm in love with your girl. But George would have taken it on the chin, wouldn't he?
I think George went on to carry on an energetically heterosexual career, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
I don't think he. I don't think he let the grass grow.
And your girl being stolen by another man became a kind of a signature that didn't remotely bother. Shrugged off.
I saw Jerry Marsden live at the Liverpool Wimbledon Cup final. In whenever that was.
Yeah.
Late 80s, is that right?
Yeah.
And he came on the pitch to sing You'll Never Walk Alone in front of the Liverpool faithful. And it was You know, it was a shivering moment. That was quite
incredible.
Quite something, you know, because here's the secret: if you never walk alone, it's a really good song.
It's a fantastic
song. It's a fantastic song. It just,
I don't think I've ever listened to the original Rodgers and Hammerstein, so I'm going to have to go back and listen to it.
Oh, I saw.
The idea that it's from a musical and someone identified that as being a classic anthem. It's brilliant.
I don't know if it was at the time. I think it was picked up much later.
Yeah.
But by God, it's a good song.
It's an incredible song.
So, Jerry Marsden, you know, we salute you.
This is a junction in the Word podcast. It separates that bit from this next bit.
Here we go. Any other business? We're joined by Alex.
Hello.
How are you doing, Alex?
Well.
Hey, Magic.
I wanted to ask you, Alex, about this story that gripped me in the last week. There's a classical piano player called Angela Hewitt. I think she's Canadian. She's terribly good. She lost her piano, didn't she, in a bizarre piano accident, didn't she, Mark?
It was dropped. Someone was transporting it to a concert, I think, and they dropped the piano. That's bad. They won't be rehired, will they? Oh, my God.
And so, you know, if you're a piano player, this clearly, it can't just be replaced easily, you know. And so she got the piano manufacturers, they prepared 5 pianos for her. Okay, this gives you an idea of the scale of the deal here. 5, this is a top-end Italian piano manufacturer. Right, these have got to be your best work. This is going to Angela Hewitt. You know, there will be publicity about this. This has got to be faultless in every way. So they prepare, they finally decide they've got 5 pianos that they're prepared to show, not to her, but to her tuner.
They weren't good enough. There's the 5.
What is it? The fish John West rejects.
Yes, that makes John West the best.
So 5 of them are presented to her piano tuner, who presumably just walks down, hits middle C or something on each one. And immediately, this is the bit of the story that fascinates me, immediately dismissed 3 of them. No interest in those 3. They may be your best work. They're not good enough for me and my client, okay? And then presented the 2 to her to choose. Explain that to me, Alex, on behalf of Planet Musician.
Right, yeah. So her piano tuner is going to be the guy, obviously, who maintains her instrument to her specifications. Now, she's going to want a certain timbre, a certain kind of key weighting, when she plays the piano that feels and sounds right to her. So for example, when my old acoustic guitar got smashed to smithereens on tour by a flight case, and I got a new one, and it took about 6 months to find the right one according to the criteria that I felt made the right instrument for me. For a guitarist, a luthier that you go to regularly to maintain your guitar knows exactly what kind of action you want, the height of the strings, all that kind of stuff. Her tuner is going to know exactly to the sort of micro dimension what she's going to want from her instrument. So if 3 of those pianos were, you know, just a little bit out,
it felt wrong on the fingers.
He's going to know.
I thought it was absolutely amazing, you know. And then he presented to her with 2, and she immediately decided which one she wanted. And it was really moving. She posted clips on YouTube of her first kind of performance with it, you know, in her house. It was very moving to see, you know, artist and an instrument.
It would, but so much of your life as a classical musician is your association with that instrument, isn't it?
Yeah.
Violin players, famously, I've got a friend who's in a violin quartet, and, you know, I went and had a drink with him, and he had the violin with him. He'd been recording that day, he had it with him on his knee, kind of clutching it, because, you know, if you lost that, your entire life is wrapped up in it, not just its value and the insurance you have to pay, but the your relationship with playing it, the sound it makes, you know. And the traditionally, the classical musicians sell their violins, don't they?
Well, they talk about popping your fiddle, don't they? If you've got a debt crisis, you can pawn it or something. They're traditionally, I was told this by a guy from the Musicians Union only about 20 years ago. He said violinists still do that. When they retire, they sell their instrument because that's their pension out of what they can get for it. It's absolutely extraordinary.
On the classical music tip, I can remember we published a piece in Q magazine in the 80s about classical music. Fantastically good piece. And it talked about the difference in characters between the people who played certain instruments. And the really different characters were the brass players, who were these kind of really kind of loud and kind of shouty and exhibitionist types, but also tended to have the worst drink problems.
Yes.
And they said the reason for that, which I thought was really interesting, is if you're a violin player, there's probably eight of you, and that's just the violins, and you're embedded in a whole string section with cellos and violas, etc. And you're therefore playing with other people all the time, and you tend to be playing most of the time. The strings are in classical music tend to be in most movements, but if you're a brass player, you can have two whole movements where you don't play at all, and then there's absolute silence, and you have to come in and hit a top C. And that's a pitch note. It's not like a piano where you know which key you press. You've got a pitch to hit that note. He said that the nervous strain of being a trumpet player or whatever it is so great. These guys go straight to the bar afterwards and tip down several pints. Well, it's quite interesting, really.
Presumably the guy who plays the triangle is the most pissed person in the orchestra because, he's standing there for hours. Until he just...
And then ding, that's right, And it's live on radio and you're at the Royal Albert Hall or whatever, Fantastically interesting.
So talking of music and the music industry, I see Music Week is no longer going to be published weekly. And this is the trade paper for people who don't know. Well, everybody knows Music Week, don't they? Because we've all remember the days when you used to go to a record shop and you'd look at the chart.
Yeah, yeah, the central pages would be stuck up on the wall, wouldn't they? When we were in Smash Hits, it was the Bible, wasn't it, though? You'd get Music Week and it'd find out what the airplay charts, what was likely to be a hit, what was going to be a hit, what the release records were, because you had to work out what was going to be on the cover of Smash Hits that in 2 weeks' time hopefully would be on Top of the Pops. It was a complicated equation, wasn't it?
Yeah, well...
And it's still going to be called Music Week, even though it's monthly, which struck me as interesting because, in fact, Entertainment Weekly, I think, is a monthly too, isn't it?
I think it probably is. I think it probably is nowadays.
Entertainment Weekly is a monthly.
I certainly
still call it Entertainment Weekly.
I don't know if there are any Australian listeners who can tell us this, but Australia's biggest women's magazine used to be Australian Women's Weekly, and it was a monthly. That was the case many, many years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was still proudly called Australian Women's Week.
That's right.
So presumably they're going to do the same thing with Music Week. And it won't be easy, because that kind of information that used to be really hard to find, or you can only find it through Music Week, nowadays you can't keep it away, It's available absolutely everywhere. So what have we got going on in the world of Word in Your Attic, Word in Your Ear? Over the next week, we've recorded some further Word in Your Attics, haven't we, which are yet to fly.
We were recording with Mike Batts. Actually, talking of Mike Batts, did I ever tell you about my great idea?
Oh, go on.
Go on.
I didn't have the nerve to tell him this, but I had an idea that you could do an Oasis tribute album in the style of the Wombles, right? You know what it'd be called?
Go on.
What's the story, Tobermory?
Very good. That's good. You got his email. Drop him a line. Suggest that. Tell him just take 1%.
Yeah.
That's incredibly funny. That's still to come out, isn't it? Mike Batt, we recorded that.
And Tom Holland, the historian, we've recorded.
Terrific.
Both fantastic.
Yeah, they're really good.
And what have we got coming up?
Graham Gouldman, the 10cc, coming up.
Graham Gouldman coming up soon. And
Andy Miller from Backlisted Podcast. Yeah. He's going to be
so really good. Loads of things going on. And so if you want to make sure that you catch all of them, and you catch them early, and you see them when they are there to be seen, like you would be seeing this if you are signed up to be a Patreon supporter, which you can do by going to patreon.com/wordinyourear and find further details. You can join at any level that suits you, sir or madam. And you can also take part in our Friday night quiz, which is fast becoming a staple of many people's week, isn't it, Alex?
It is.
More and more people joining it all the time. And we started again after Christmas. And so we had the kind of finale of the 2020 competition.
The pie winner.
The pie winner.
A tremendous pork pie made by some pals of ours in Norfolk.
Yeah, and so we start again and now, so we're in the second week, so you can join us in the third week. So patreon.com/wordinyourear to find out what's going on and how you could be part of it. Thanks very much for tuning in. Cheers.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.